Radio is helping people rebuild their lives after a war that claimed almost 4 million lives over a decade in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It's the bloodiest conflict since World War II. With me now for the first part of Underreported is Wanda Hall, who founded Interactive Radio for Justice. She produces radio programs in Eastern Congo, where many of the worst atrocities occurred. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
When did you start this radio project?
We started in May 2005.
And what was happening in Congo at the time?
Well, the prosecutor for the International Criminal Court had announced his investigations in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2004. And so I went there as soon as I could to start a project that would create a way for the community involved to speak directly with the authorities that have been charged with rendering them justice. And community radio is the most effective means of communication in that region.
But wasn't fighting continuing at that time?
The situation continues to be unstable. Fighting continues till today.
Even though there's been some kind of a peace agreement?
Exactly. At the official end of the war, most of the armed groups signed a peace accord. But groups that were in the Ituri region were left out of the negotiations in Kinshasa. And the result has been that there are still armed groups in that region until today.
Well, maybe we should do a little recap in case some listeners are not familiar with the background of the wars, or maybe I should say wars in Congo that began in the mid-90s. First, there were the refugees fleeing the Rwandan genocide, and that set off ethnic strife in, I guess, 1994. And then Laurent Kabila overthrew Mobutu Sese Seko in 1997, and soon his former allies turned against him. And there have been all sorts of other conflicts and private armies that have gotten involved as well for one reason or another.
The war in Congo has been referred to as Africa's Great War. And there are 9 countries in Africa were involved in the war in Congo.
You mean the neighbors of Congo?
Neighboring countries, but also not so neighboring countries. The issue really is wealth, especially the northeastern region. But Congo in general is a very rich country with so many natural resources. And that has been the source of the conflict.
And was the source of the conflict from the start of Congo when it first became an independent nation. Moise Tshombe seceded so that he could take over one of the wealthier areas of the country, and that led to a war even then.
Yeah.
So what are the people in Congo doing to recover from all those years of war and the destruction that they've endured? I mean, how does radio work with that?
I think the situation in northeastern Congo is particular and very interesting because it's such a rich region. The international community seems to be very concerned with bringing peace and stability to this region. And the crimes were so grave that happened that it caught the attention of the International Criminal Court, which is based in The Hague. And their mandate are the worst crimes, genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes. And the Democratic Republic of Congo was actually the first case of the prosecutor of the ICC. And because of all this international attention, MONUC is there. The largest United Nations peacekeeping force is in Congo, and most of their resources are in the Ituri region. The international community has invested millions of euros in rebuilding the justice system in Ituri, the national courts. The international court is doing investigations there. There's this window of opportunity. Structures are being put in place, and there's a window of opportunity to help the community use these structures. And community radio is the most efficient way of communication in this region. And so if you're going to do education, if you're going to do civil society development, if you're trying to involve the community, community radio is the tool to use.
Well, in other countries like South Africa and Rwanda, reconciliation councils have been employed.
Yes.
Is radio being used as part of that kind of approach?
Well, I use radio in the Interactive Radio for Justice project really to educate and to encourage participation. So I'm not encouraging any specific answer, just that citizens educate themselves and become involved in the process of justice.
Well, maybe we should listen to a clip from one of the radio programs you produced. This is called A Child, and it's from an interview that you did with a young woman named Sifa Birungi.
My name is Sifa Birungi. I live here alone with my baby, and I pay rent by myself. We get by, and I make enough food for my work, but sometimes I have to ask my older brothers for help.
So how do you stay positive, Sifa, as you face your troubles and try to reach your dream at the same time?
I think about what I experienced when I was in the bush, and I remember how hard it was compared to my problems today. There's a big difference between then and now, and I have to keep focus on the fact that my life is getting better. Even if this kind of war comes back, we can't go back to the armed groups. That's how you lose your soul.
This is WNYC. I'm Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking with Wanda Hall, who founded Interactive Radio for Justice. We just heard a clip from an interview she did with Sifa Birungi. Now, what did Sifa experience?
Well, Sifa is a former child soldier. This series, we have four series in the project, and this one's actually called A Child, Yesterday in the Bush, Today Part of Our Community.
Now, so how old is she? Because she talked about a child.
She's 19 now. She entered an armed rebel group when she was 16. Each program in this series tells the personal story of one child. So when Sifa spoke with us, she told her story. She fought as a soldier and as a, well, young girls who are soldiers are also what they call escorts for 2 years. She fell pregnant when she was in the bush, and she returned to Bunia, where her family was from, went to have her baby. And her baby is almost a year old now.
And she said she didn't want to go back to the armed groups.
Right.
Is there any benefit to going back to them?
Actually, unfortunately, some of the children that we speak to have been demobilized already twice and gone back and then tried to demobilize again. The problem is that there's not much for these children when they return. If they've grown up in the bush, if they've spent 5 years in the bush, their education is fighting. And so to come back and try to rebuild your life, it's not an easy thing. And there aren't many opportunities right now in war-torn Ituri.
Have you been able to follow what's happened to Sifa since you did the interview?
Well, actually, Sifa told us that her dream, she got inspired because she saw an international, a woman, driving a 4x4, an aid car. And she thought to herself, well, if this woman can be a chauffeur, then I can be a chauffeur. And she has enrolled herself in chauffeur training school, and she should be certified by the end of this year, which would allow her to earn quite a decent living working as a chauffeur for an international aid organization.
A lot of the programs you produce deal with the issue of how to achieve justice now that the war is officially over. What kind of justice do the people you speak with in the Ituri region want?
Well, when we talk to the citizens, our programs are interactive. So what we usually do is go out into the markets and into the hospitals and ask people what they want to know. And we work on the principle that every question gets an answer. And people ask questions from everyday justice. I call it everyday justice. Do the police have a right to beat me up if I don't have my identity card? Do the military have a right to pull me over and demand all the money in my pocket? To national justice. Will I be allowed to vote? The new constitution in the Congo, what is that going to be like? To international justice, why is the International Criminal Court investigating here? Why are our crimes worse than other crimes? And we work on the principle where we try to find the highest authority possible to answer these questions.
Do you have the ear of the Congolese government?
We have been extremely fortunate in having the participation of authorities on all those levels. The Minister of Justice from the Democratic Republic of Congo has spoken on our program. The Minister of Human Rights, the investigator for the military in Kinshasa, as well as all the local authorities.
If not for radio, how could these people get answers to their questions?
That is the key to the success of this program, because right now it's the only way that they're able to voice their concerns and have an interaction with these authorities.
Because they all would own a radio, if not a television set, and people would have a cell phone or some other kind of access?
Television is almost non-existent in most parts of Congo. Radios are everywhere. In some communities that are very poor, you might have one radio for a neighborhood, but it's a
And then they have listening clubs.
Exactly. But in many places, everyone has a radio. Cell phones are also pretty predominant in the region, and people can text. They don't call in because of finance reasons, but they'll text in questions, and we'll try to address them as well.
And how do those listening clubs work? They just people all sit around and share the experience and then talk about it?
We set them up initially so that we could have some focal groups to analyze the impact of our project, and we're based in Bunia, which is a fairly diverse but still divided community. So we have listening clubs set up in each ethnic neighborhood. And they meet once a week and listen to the programming and then discuss afterwards. And we record their questions for future programming.
I'm assuming this is also a way to train people to become radio journalists. I mean, are you employing locals?
Yes. I work with a local team. I've trained a local team, but this is not a training project. I rely on their expertise, and we grow professionally together.
And who this radio services is funded by an NGO? Is it funded by the UN?
I receive funding from independent foundations through an American NGO called Insight Collaborative, which is run out of Boston. And at the moment, I receive funding from the John and Catherine MacArthur Foundation in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming you are asking the kinds of questions that people want answered. You're relying on the text messages that they send you,
We travel to a new village every month, and I like to go into the hospitals, I like to go into the markets, I go to the churches, and I just ask people if they have any questions about justice. And as I mentioned, every question gets an answer, and it's the citizens that decide what we talk about on the programs.
Do you think it's very important that countries like Congo that are recovering from years of devastation are able to produce their own media?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is a deficit of information. They don't have enough contact with the outside world. And communication is essential for civil society to development, and media plays a key role in that.
I'm assuming there are also not too many newspapers.
No, there's a problem of illiteracy, and also simple infrastructure. This region has been completely destroyed by the war.
When you started producing radio shows in Eastern Congo, were the people you worked with immediately receptive to the idea, or did they have to be convinced?
I was very lucky because I'm working with a community radio that is dedicated to bringing peace to their region. And so they were receptive, and they are the perfect partner for me because they represent all of the ethnic groups in the region. And with them as my team, I can go anywhere.
Some of the things that these people experienced, these traumatic things, also would cause them troubles within their tribal traditions or their villages. Have they been very open, or do they have to be coaxed into telling some of these stories?
The citizens. I think that because I work with a local team that is so rooted in peace in their region and represents all of the ethnic groups, that I have trust when I go into communities, and I'm able to get the participation of all the different groups in the region. Also, I think the simple fact that they get their questions answered, that they through this project they have a voice, really helps.
And what language are these broadcasts done in?
We produce our programming in French, Swahili, and Lingala.
Now that you're in this country, what do you think about what you read about Africa in our newspapers?
Well, actually, I'm here in the States with the mission of talking about this region and the other regions where the ICC is doing their investigations to spur interest in doing more reporting, because I think that there's a deficit in reporting and a deficit in understanding.
Most people don't realize that so many people have died in Congo. As I said, it is the most devastating conflict since World War II. And
exactly.
Yet it's kind of invisible in the West.
Unfortunately so, yes.
And what about in Africa? Are people, because Congo is in the heart of Africa, and if conflict continues there, it spills out into neighboring countries. Do Africans, are they much more aware of what's going on in the country?
Yes. What I've been able to learn through doing this project and listening to the questions that citizens ask, Africans, the Congolese that are asking these questions, understand very well the dynamics in that region and the interconnectedness of the conflicts, Darfur, Chad, Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, Central African Republic. You can't understand one of these conflicts without taking into consideration the others. And it's extremely important, not only for the stability of Africa, but also for world stability.
I'm assuming that you feel very frustrated when you try to talk about these things outside of Africa, because most people have no idea.
Well, I think I'm actually very hopeful. I mean,
people are very aware of what's happening in Darfur.
Yes.
We tend to focus on one serious problem at a time.
Right. I remember thinking, when the tsunami happened, that there's a tsunami in Congo every 3 or 4 months, and it doesn't hit the news if you talk about number of people dying. And that is frustrating, but I think that it's better to look at it and that there's so much opportunity, and I feel very grateful that I have the chance to talk with you today and to talk with academics and with NGOs and to try to encourage more activity in these regions.
We have put a link to Interactive Radio for Justice on our show page at WNYC.org, so our listeners can get an idea of the scope of the things that you do. And we are going to go out of the segment with a cut of music you included in one of your radio broadcasts. It's a song by the Congolese singer Vawasu Ninja Mamakanda, called All Girls in School. He says that to educate a woman is to educate a whole nation. So I'm assuming there still is hope in Congo.
Absolutely.
Are more girls going to school?
Yes.
And this is despite the horrific crimes that have been committed against women in Congo over the years.
Not only girls, but also young boys. When I talk to them after they come back from the bush, they want to go to school.
Thank you so much for being with us, Wanda Hall, who founded Interactive Radio for Justice.
And thank you.
Merci, je suis une fille. Je dois aller à l'école pour assurer mon avenir. Oh là là, UNICEF. Je vous prie, mes chers parents, de prendre à main vos responsabilités pour que j'aille à l'école. Oh là là, mes parents. Pardon, papa, j'insiste, faites-moi femme instruite, utile à la famille, à la nation, à l'univers.